Okay, we're about to embark upon one of the most fundamental sugyas in Masechet Chulin. It's a sugya that we've spoken about, we've referenced little bits and pieces, but we haven't really learned the sugya in a sense in its totality. So we're going to try to begin it right now. Actually, there are really different parts of the sugya, but we're going to begin now with the name of this particular sugya is Bittul Barov. Bittul Barov, that's something that we've mentioned many, many times, but let's try to get some of the intricacies of how Bittul Barov works, when Bittul Barov works, what are some of the exceptions to the principle of Bittul Barov. So the sugya begins on Chulin Daf Tzadik Tes Amud Beis with the first of the Marmakomos, where the Gemara is commenting on a line of the Mishnah. It's very hard to believe that we are still in the same Mishnah. Right? We're ready after Pesach. We haven't switched to the second Mishnah yet. So the Mishnah told us an example of a type of a tarogas, a type of a mixture. And the example that the Mishnah gave was a gid hanosha that gets mixed up with a lot of gid hanosha. We actually spoke about different scenarios. First, we spoke about a gid hanosha getting cooked within the leg of the animal itself. And then the Mishnah spoke about a gid shenisar b'magidim. So you have one piece of food, which is treif, which is not kosher, the gid hanosha, gets mixed up with a lot of other nerves, a lot of other sinews, which are permissible. The only problem is I can't tell which is which. So the Mishnah told us there are really two halachas that are playing out. One, there's an issue of tam, that you have to always reckon with the taste of the gid hanosha. Now, it just happens to be that we paskin that part of the Mishnah is not actually accepted, because we paskin that ain begidin b'nos and tam. So we're not so worried about the taste of the gid hanosha. But the other half of the Mishnah is what concerns us much more, and that is the Mishnah says, if you can't tell which is the gid hanosha, then you have a big problem. You have 100 gidim sitting on the table in front of you, and one of them is the gid hanosha, 99 of them are not. So the Mishnah says, kula masaru. They're all asur. You can't have to throw a wall out. You can't eat any of them. Because if you eat any one of them, there's always a chance that you may be eating the tray for one. So it's on that that the Gemara asks, really? Why is that a problem? So take a look at the first of the Marmar Kamas. Gidanosha is bashel. The lifto baruba asks the Gemara, why don't we say that Gidanosha should be batel barov? After all, you have 100 to 1, not even 100 to 1, you have 2 to 1. So the Mishnah is talking about 2 to 1. So the Mishnah said, we asked him about the lift of Aruba, why don't you just say that the one Gid Anosha should be Batel in the two that are kosher, and it should be Mutter. Now, we're not quite sure what it should be Mutter means. You can eat all three of them, you can eat two of them, one person can eat all three, three people can eat all three. Well, we don't know the details yet. We have a lot of work to do. But it says the Mishnah is clearly not correct. How can the Mishnah say kol masurim? That's not true. The lifto baruba. That's the Gemara's question. So you see from the Gemara that bittul barov works. From the fact that the Gemara asks the question, you see clear as day that there's a concept that Allah called bittul barov. And even from the Gemara's ultimate solution to the Mishnah, the Gemara never backs out from that premise. The Gemara answers two words at the top of the Maram Kamos, first in Maram again, very shiny. No. Gid hanosha is different. Gid hanosha is not batel. Why is Gid hanosha not batel? Because Gid hanosha is a barrier. Now, the word barrier also is a loaded topic, which hopefully we're going to talk a lot more about in weeks to come. But basically, for our purposes, what barrier means is that it's a unit, it's a creature, it's a whole entity, and as such, it's not subject to the regular rules of batel. Now, just for jumping ahead for a couple of shiurim, that when the Gemara says barrier shayni, the Gemara just told us that the concept of barrier overrides and trumps the principle of bittul barov. That is going to become critical for us in Hilchos Kashrus, because one of the things that just happens to be a barrier is a bug, it's an insect. It's actually based on Psukim of the end of last week's Pasha Shmini, and that's going to create a whole series of Kashrus complications for us in terms of bugs and checking, and are bugs ever going to be bottle? First, he made himself a broccoli soup and didn't check the broccoli properly. How's that going to play out? So we have a lot of potential issues in terms of Hilchos Barrier, but again, that's not really actually right now. So what's more important for us is more important than the answer to the Gemara is the question of the Gemara, for Liftel Baruba. So it's clear as day for the Gemara that Bittul Barov works. That is a Torah concept, Bittul Barov, and that is something that we will apply if and when it is applicable. Every once in a while, we're going to run into a barrier problem, but it's a whole unit, a whole entity, a whole creature that's going to trump the rules of Bittul Barov. But by and large, Bittul Barov is going to be something that we are going to invoke into those kashrus. The problem is that this seems to literally fly in the face of another sugya that we spoke a lot about really months ago. That's the second of the Ma'amakamas. Gemara Chulin of Tzadi Zayin of Beis was talking about when you have a Tarobus, you have a mixture. So when do we follow Shishim? When do we ask a Goy to taste for us? And the Gemara said the following, Umid B'mino, the lake of the make of a time. If you have a Tarobus of Min B'mino, a mixture of two things that are basically the same. Let's say I'm cooking a little bit of a pot of kosher chicken soup and a little tray for chicken soup fell in. So what am I going to do? But one thing I'll tell you I'm not going to do, I'm not going to call in my non-Jewish chef and ask them, could you please tell me, do you taste the non-kosher chicken soup? That would be an absurd question because all the chicken soup tastes the same. If some non-kosher chicken soup fell into a pot of potato soup, then we can open up the discussion of asking the non-Jew to taste. That would make sense. Ask the non-Jew to taste by min b'mino is absurd. So that's what the Gemara says, that min b'mino, the lake of the time, whenever you have a tarobus, if you have a mixture of two items that are the same basic thing, there's no real difference in taste, or inami b'she'eno mino, isur b'lek fail, or even if you have a tarobus of non-kosher chicken soup into potato soup, but there's no non-Jew around, then b'shishim. So then the magic number shishim kicks in. That's where the magic number 60 times makes sense. So if you come to a rabbi and ask him, Mishael the rabbi, I have a little bit of tray for chicken soup, fell into my potato soup. What's really supposed to happen is they should ask a non-Jew to taste and feel. If you can't find a non-Jew, then you go off to shishim. This matters that we don't look around for non-Jews to taste for a variety of reasons. And the thing is we always fall on the fallback plan. We always check for shishim. But it's clear from the Gemara that you check for shishim. And you check for shishim, even by min b'mino. So therein lies the problem. This is the contradiction that all the Rishonim are bothered with. The Ravid and the Rashba and the Rosh, the Rambam, every Rishon under the sun has to deal with this contradiction. What do you do? This is Tarobus, this is Rabbinics 101. What do you do when you have a mixture that comes in front of you of similar kinds of items? Again, Goyim's tasting is completely irrelevant. I have a Tarobus of similar kinds of items. What do I do? Do I fall back on shishim? Or do I say, what do I need shishim for? It's the morov. As long as it's majority, that's good enough. So that's an outright contradiction between the two sugyas. So the first in the Ma'amakamah said, the lift of Baruba. So the Gemara says, you follow rov. The Gemara didn't say, Booth didn't say a word about the number shishim. And the second Gemara talks about shishim. So what do you need shishim? You don't need shishim. There's a pretty big difference. Are Isurim Bato Barov or Isurim Bato B'shishim? Again, we're not talking about when there's no Sinda. When there's a taste, it's a whole different ballgame. I'm talking about Gid Begidim. I'm talking about a Nevela with a tray for salami with kosher salami. I'm talking about tray for chicken soup with kosher chicken soup. I'm talking about two similar tasting items, one kosher and not one non kosher. I have a very, very simple question. I want to know, Rabbi, how much do I need for it to be Bato? Do I need Rov? Or do I need shishim? That's the entire question. That's all I want to do. That's the question that we have to deal with. So there is a major machlokes of Rishonim from one extreme to another as to what the answer to this question is. So come one group of Rishonim, which are led by the Ravid. I don't mean the Ravid that we're familiar with. The Rav of Beis Din. We also have the Rosh Tevos of Ravid. It's the Rav of Beis Din. And also by Rabbeinu Gershom. Gershom wrote a parish of Rabbeinu Gershom in some parts of the Masechtas. We have a little bit from Rabbeinu Gershom in Masechtas Chulin. So both Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rav Beis Din have the following fascinating shot in our Gemara. So let's take a look at Rabbeinu Gershom for a moment. The third of the Ramakamos. The Lifto, the Ramas of Lifto, Kloma Amrus Bizman Sheim Akiro, Kulun Asuri, Rabbeinu Zidam, Tim Yeshishim, Rotem Mutim. Says Rabbeinu Gershom, when you have shishim, then you're okay. Shishim, I read the same Gemara on the first of Rambam Kamas. I didn't see a word about shishim. I saw the word ruba. So where did Rabbeinu Gershom know to stick in the magic number 60? So the Rashba, the fourth of the Rambam Kamas, quotes in the name of the Rav Beis Din. Again, it's a long, long way. We're going to leave out the Rashba now. Those have a lot of time that I can read through the whole Rashba. We're just going to take out a snip of the Rashba in the name of Rav Beis Din, who says that, yes, the magic number shishim appears in our Gemara as well. Where? I don't see it. So comes the Rashi and Rabbi Beis Din and say, when the Gemara asks those words, lifto beruba, Translate for me precisely what the word ruba means. Translate precisely. Open a dictionary. The word ruba means roba. Doesn't ruba mean majority? Doesn't ruba mean 51%? Isn't that what the word rove means? No, says the Rabbi Basin. The word rove, the word ruba here means in a lot. It means when you have a lot. Doesn't mean rove literally 51%. It doesn't mean two pieces to one piece. It means a lot. In contrast to asering the kosher, in contrast to not being able to be botel. So according to the Rabbi Basin, by extension of Ben Yershom, the Gemara meant something totally and completely different. Let's go back to the Gemara, the first of the Rambam Kodesh, for a second. The first source started with Gidah Asher Bashal, quote from the Mishnah. When you have a Gidah Nosha, it gets mixed in with other Gidin. Kulan Asuros, they're all Asur. There's no Bittul. One in a billion is going to pose a problem. There's no Bittul when you have Gidah Nosha. Ask the Gemara for Lifto Baruba, why not? Why is it never Bittul? Let it be botel in a significant amount. Remember the word rove. Ruba doesn't mean rove anymore. Ruba means ribuya, means a lot, means a tremendous amount. Why are you telling me a story in the Mishnah that the Gidah Nosha is never botel? It's never botel. It is botel. It's botel in a lot. How much is a lot? What's the magic number that the Gemara was referring to? So comes Rabbi Negashim, comes to Rabbi Bezin and say, well, we know that already because we already learned the Gemara. The second of the Gemara Bekovas, which tells us what the alat is. A lot of shishim, a lot of 60 times. So come the Rishonim and say that we misunderstood, we misread, we mistranslated the phrase v'lifto beruba. And what we should have translated, rather than to mean botel berov, it should have been botel in a significant amount, and the significant amount is shishim. So that's the first interpretation of Rishonim. The overwhelming majority of the Rishonim do not accept this view. And the halacha we'll see as the sugya unravels, we do not accept this view. We take the Gemara kepshuta. We take the Gemara literally at face value. The Gemara says, Ruba, it meant majority. So what's going on in the second source? How can the Gemara talk about Shishim? So let's get down to the Rosh on the fifth of the Rambam Kamos. The Rosh, in the seventh Parak Sifat Lamed Zayin, has the following chiddush. Says the Rosh, Umidirabanon, first word the Rosh has said Midirabanon. He really changed the world. He said Midirabanon. Namely, the Rosh is about to set up for us two different categories. There's a Deraisadic world, and there's a Dirabanadic world. So we have to understand what the Deraisadic world is. Then we have to understand what prompted the Chacham to change that world to create certain Chumras Midirabanon. And then we have to see precisely what those Chumras were. So the Rosh explains it all to us in 3 lines. I left that a little bit. I ran quickly through the first couple of words. We don't need that for right now. Says the Rosh, "But the Rabbanon they were machmir by min b'mino to require shishim. Even though there's no taste." Why? Gezeira ato min b'she'en amina. Boom, the Rosh just said it all in that one line. Says the Rosh, min ha-Torah, there are two different rules that govern uchas tarobas. They're very, very different rules b'daraisa. One is bitul berov, and one is bitul ta'am. Bitul berov means that whenever you have a tarobas, min ha-Torah, the first question you have to ask yourself is, do I have rov, heter, or not? If the answer is yes, then you're good to go, almost. Provided you can answer the second question. First of all, minatari after bevatel baro. Then you have to ask yourself, is there tam here or not? Now, when do you have to ask that second question? You only have to pose that second question if it's a type of itarobus that lends itself to tam, i.e., it's min b'she'en omino. If it's min b'mino, if it all tastes the same, so what kind of tam are we talking about? If it's chicken soup and chicken soup, if it's two pieces of meat that are identical, just because one's kosher, one's treif, but there's no tam to even discuss. The only time you have to even raise the second question is if you have foods that are different from one another. So I have my proverbial treif for chicken soup and my potato soup. Ooh, then you have a second question, the espinatora. So there are really two different tests, two different questions that have to be asked in the Raisa every time a Tarobis comes. Somebody comes with a pot of soup. They come to the rabbi and say, Rabbi Gaval, you won't believe it. A little bit of chassis. Oh, Gaval, what do I do? Help. What do I do? So the rabbi has to think through the question on two levels. First of all, is there rov? Is there rov kosher food versus treif food? So the answer is yes. Then we can begin to ask the second question. It was like the forms. You know, if you answer no to the following question, then the game's over. If you answer yes, then you can press the button on the computer and then go to the next set of questions on the form. So the answer is yes. I have rov. I can breathe a sigh of relief almost. And then I have to ask a second question. Is there tam or is there no tam? If there's tam, I have a huge problem in that Torah called tam kika, called nosin tam. So if the answer to that second question is yes, I have tam, then the food is still treif in that Torah. The answer is no, there is no tam, then I'm good to go. So comes the Rosh and says, this is how the two different sets of questions are going to play out in different kinds of tarobas and min ha-Torah. If I have a tarobas of min b'mino, I'm going to first ask the question, do I have a robe? And the answer is yes, Baruch Hashem. Then I'm going to turn the page and ask the next question, do I have tam? So the answer to that question is N-A, not applicable. There is no question, there's not a question. Do I have tam? What do you mean tam? How could you even raise the question of tam when the two things taste identical? There is no such thing as tam when they taste identical by definition. So therefore, the answer is min haTorah. The second question is not applicable, and everything is covered by the first question. So the answer is Avro, I'm good to go. The answer is the food is kosher. But now, when I have a similar kind of a question, but now I have it with a tarobas of min b'she'ino mino, so I have to first ask the question, is there rov? The answer is yes. Now the second question is very applicable. Is there tam? Maybe yeah, maybe no. How do I know the answer to that question? If I had a good taste, that would be great, but I don't have one. So what do? Chazal did the math for us. They went to the laboratory for us. They came with the following number called shishim. If you have shishim, then you can rest assured that there is no tam. So you can give a check, no tam. Good to go. So notice, now if I had a tarobas and min b'mino, I really only had to ask one question of rov. If I have a tarobas and min b'sheino mino, I have to ask two questions. That's the din b'Torah. If you would present those two questions to Moshe Rabbeinu, those are the two answers you would get. Chicken soup, rov. Chicken soup, potato soup, shishim. Those are the two d'oraisa that get answers. However, mid d'rabbanan, we can imagine that Chazal had a lot of problems. But the Rabbanan, that is a very, very risky business, because if we let people just answer those questions in those two ways, you know what's going to happen next time? Someone's going to have a tarobas of potato soup and chicken soup with the potato soup, and they're going to remember, last week the rabbi told me that chicken soup is bottled the rove. What's the difference? Chicken and the potato, chicken and the chicken, what's the difference? So if the person who never learned chul, never learned day, doesn't understand, doesn't chop, that there's a huge difference. In one case, there's a nosin tam to reckon with min haTorah. In the other case, there is no nosin tam, not applicable information. And therefore, this is grounds for the gezeirah of the Rabbanan, that Chazal would gezer a tarogas of min b'mino, otu min b'she'eino mino. That is what the Rosh meant with this one. So the entire institution of shishim, is it the araisa or is it the Rabbanan, says the Rosh? It depends. By min b'she'eino mino, it's very much the araisa. By min b'mino, it is only min d'rabbanan as a gezeirah. So now comes the Rosh and says, now that I explained to you that the entire reason for shishim by min b'mino is only a gezeirah, otto min b'she'eino mino, now Agamar reads like a charm. Why does Agamar not mention shishim? Why does Agamar ask Slifto Baruba? The Rosh did not believe that Ruba meant anything except for Ruba. He didn't believe it meant a lot. He believed it meant majority. So why isn't the number Shishim present in Asugi? So the Rosh continues, back to the fifth of Ramah Kamos, the middle of the second line. Avamin Mamina Bedover Yavech. You know why? Everything's dry. There's no intermingling. There's nothing. But no, the Taravasa Nasa Het the Gomor. Rafilu Midirabanavotzuch Shishim. Came in the Avanis Bashal Yer time, says the Rosh. It's a huge difference. That Chazal made a gezeirah. That's when there is a parallel concern of tam. When I have chicken soup that's mixing with chicken soup, that can easily become chicken soup mixed with the potato soup. So there are grounds for gezeirah. But if it's dvar mivashim, it's not in a pot. Nothing's going on to the fire. There's no mixing. It's not a belila. There's no lach balach. It's just three pieces of meat on the table. Two kosher salamis and one tray salami on the table together, no packaging on any of them, is mutter min haTorah because of it to barov, and it's mutter min derabbanan because of bittul barov. And what do you tell me a story? Let's make a gezeira to require shishi. What kind of gezeira? Gezeiras make sense when it's balul, when it's mixed, when it's taste, when it's on the pot, it's on the fire. That's when shishi makes sense as a gezeira. When everything's what we call yavish biyavish, there's nothing to talk about. And therefore, not only did Torah's bittul barov the only issue, but the rabbanan bittul barov is the only criteria as well. So according to the Rush, the answer to the question, how come in the first of the Marmakomos, no mention of Shishim, and the second of Marmakomos is mention of Shishim? The answer is, one's Yavish B'Yavish, and one's Lach Lach, as is obvious from the case. That's exactly what the case is talking about. One is Yavish B'Yavish, and one is Lach Lach. So we have a major Machlekes in Rishonim now, a fundamental, basic Machlekes in Rishonim, between the Raivin and the Menageshim on the one end, against the Rush on the other end. What and when do we require Shishim? What is this magic number Shishim all about? So according to the Rava Beis and Rebbe Geshem, Shishim is an absolute chayk lo yavor. Any and every tarovus and nindamino require Shishim. You require Shishim of chicken soup into chicken soup. You require Shishim with salamis next to salamis. If you have three salamis, two kosher, one treif, according to Rebbe Geshem and Rebbe, you cannot eat those salamis. If you have 60 kosher salamis and one trade, a lot of friends give you a lot of shalchmanis, it's 60 kosher salamis and one trade of salami, and you just can't see which is which. So then and only then can you say it's both the b'shishim. So according to the Rava based in bit of b'shishim is chayk b'layam, or it's not negotiable. Bit of b'shishim is absolute. According to Rush, it's not an absolute. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. If and when it makes sense to make a gezeira otu mimishen amino, then there's a day, then it requires shishim in derbana. And if there's no reason, such as Yavash B'Yavash, no reason, no gezeira. What is the Nekudas HaMachlekes? What are they arguing about? What is the disagreement between the Rush and the Gershom and the Rav all about? So the Chora, the Rush, so far has explained this position much clearer than the other Rishon. The Rush explained to us where the number Shishim comes from. Shishim is there for one reason and one reason alone, according to the Rush. The reason for Shishim is a gezeira midrabbanon otu no sein tam. The real requirement of shishim in a Torah is only by chicken soup and potato soup. When they're two different items, two different species, two different tastes, then shishim plays out in a Torah. The shishim that we're talking about is only midrabbanon as a gezeira. But at least the Rush explained what it's based on. At least the Rush explained why Chazal made the gezeira. It makes perfect sense. It was a gezeira otu. It's chicken soup and chicken soup. Maybe you're going to mix it up with chicken soup and potato soup. So everything makes sense according to the Rush. But according to the Rav HaBeisdin, why did they institute Shishim? What was the point? What was the purpose of Shishim? Min HaTorah? Who ever heard of Shishim? Min HaTorah, Bittul Barov. We read it Achar Rav Mahatos. We've quoted that possibly many times. Min HaTorah, the starting point is Rav. So I understand, according to the Rush, why they changed the rules a little bit. Because they were worried, they were concerned, lest you make a mistake in a case of Tam, which would require Shishim in a Torah to be bound to the Tam. But according to the Rav HaBeisdin, I have three salamis on the table. They're all dry. The packaging was taken off by mistake. I know for a fact two are kosher. I know for a fact one is treif. Comes the Rav HaBeisdin and says, no, sorry, you can't eat the three salamis. Midirabbanan. Why not? I have no idea. Why can't you eat these salamis? What is the engine that's driving this Issa Derabbanan of not relying on Rav by Min Bimino? What is the problem of going to Rav HaBeisdin for the communication? The answer most probably is based on a Rambam, which quoted the Rambam before. I don't think I've seen the Rambam this time because we have seen this Rambam before. But the Rambam writes that, I will tell you what is wrong with Rav. In that Torah, really nothing. But I'll tell you what's really wrong with Rav. The notion of bittul is a very, very tricky concept. Bittul, kishmo keinu, means that something is negligible, is insignificant. Something is, to invoke the imagery of bittul chometz, at the moment, ka'afra di'ara. Bittul always has the connotation of something that I kind of thought was chashuv, until recently I thought it was pretty significant. Yeah, it's garnish, it's nothing. It's dvar b'teil, it's nothing. It's interesting, we find the term bittul in multiple areas of halacha. There's bittul in terms of bittul chametz, of course, which is really a statement of this pizza. You thought this pizza was very chasher. You thought this bottle of schnapps is chasher. No, it's not. It's ka'afr di'ar to me. It's ka'afr di'ar. It's mamish garnish from garnish. It's meaningless to me. That's bittul. There's a kind of a bittul of a zara. So you have something that non-Jew bow down to this idol, the idol becomes awesome and Rami and Torah. Is there a way to get it to become mutter? Yes. If you have another non-Jew who's an Obed of Zara, if you have a religious non-Jew who's not an Obed of Zara, so then that's not going to help. Or a Jew can't do this. You have to get a non-Jew who really believes in idols. He's an idol worshiper, and he comes and says, this idol, this is nonsense. And he gives it a kick on the floor. That's called Bittul Obed Zara. So guess what? Obed Zara becomes mutter now. It loses its status. It lost its chashivas. It lost its isurim of Obed Zara. So there's a notion of Bittul and Allah. Even fine, a bittul Torah. What does bittul Torah mean? So bittul Torah, in a certain sense, means a lack of chashivos. Means that if a person really was ma'ashim Torah, they'd be sitting and learning Torah. Hello, it's not so kosher to them, the Torah. So they're four, they're doing other things. That's again, I don't want to pass get a shilin on bittul Torah. I'm not equating the bittul Torah guy with the bittul of the Zarah. But just the notion, the idea of bittul always conjures up the same image that somehow something is not so important to you. So comes the Rambam and says that in order for something to be batel, it has to really be not important. Now, how do you define not important? How do you say that something's not important? So deraisa, on a level of deraisa, bittul baruch. I have rov, achrei maariv, there's 2-1 that's considered to be not important enough. You know what says the Rambam? That doesn't look right. Lashem b'ri'adam, be'eni b'ri'adam, it doesn't give off the right, no pun intended, the right taste, it doesn't give off the right time. It doesn't look right. Here I have 3 salamis on the table. 2 of them are kosher, 1's treif. Can I really say with a straight face, oh, that trait for Islam is bottle after the I don't really care. It's not here anymore. It's not here. Is it 33% of the salamis are trait? What do you mean it's not here? It's very important. So now I have 4 salamis, and 5 salamis, and 10 salamis, and 30 salamis, and 50 salamis. At what point can I say that the trait for salami is so, it's so negligible, such insignificant amount of trait for salamis, it's bottle key after the hour. Says the Rambam, Chazal determined the magic number Shishim. Shishim, says the Rambam, is a way for us to say, and the Rambam coins a phrase, Nevar ha'iser ba'itse mi'uto. The iser is lost. Iser is so, I got 60 salamis on the table, and 1 trade of salami, come on, that 1 trade of salami is so botlam, mavutam, ki after the ara, l'shirim v'lo kayom. That's not here anymore. If I only have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 59, I don't have it, but if I have shishim, then I can invoke the principle never isgels miyutah. Again, it's a chumah min derabbanan. Min deraisa, the standard of never isgels miyutah is 2-1. Min deraisa, the Rambam concedes that you follow roiv. But min derabbanan, because we don't want to have this imagery, we don't have to have this picture of things being batel until they're really truly batel. Be'ene b'nei adam. So therefore, Chazal invoked this chumrah. Chazal instituted this chumrah called bittel, higher level, and the number is shishim. That's a totally different understanding of the requirement of shishim. It's a tremendous chumrah that emanates from that understanding of shishim. If that's the source, that's the rationale for shishim, then there is no difference whether we're dealing with alach, alach, or yavish, b'yavish. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference whether we have trace of chicken soup in kosher chicken soup, whether we have dry pieces of salami on the table. At the end of the day, you must reach this threshold of never is to be able to be used though. And that's exactly what the source of the Machlokes is in the Rambam and the Rush. In fact, the Rambam, the Raivin, and the Menegesh, we get to the Rush is all about. Why do we need Shishim? According to the one group of Rishonim, the Raivin, the Menegesh, and the Rambam, the reason for Shishim is to reach that threshold, to reach that magic point where we can say with a straight face, never the Issa be to be Yitzhak. It's not significant anymore. That threshold must be met under all circumstances, and therefore, it is inconceivable for us ever mid the rabbanon halach lemais to pass a shayla less than shishim. I don't care whether it's wet, I don't care whether it's dry, I don't care whether it's cooked, I don't care whether it's raw, I don't care about anything. Shishim is necessary because that is the only way to say with a straight face, it's never the issa b'yotze miyuto, and the issa the rabbanon has been overcome. According to the Rush, that issa the rabbanon doesn't exist. According to the Rush, never heard of that phrase. The Rush is safe for that phrase, never issa the rabbanon doesn't exist. According to the Rush, shishim is there for a much more practical reason, namely, that we are afraid that if and when, that's key according to the Rush, if and when there is a concern lest we confuse this mixture with the tarobas of min b'she'en amina, which does require shishim in the Torah because of bittul ta'am, if and when that concern exists, then the Rabbanim are going to make the Gezerah. And if and when that concern doesn't exist, then we're not going to make the Gezerah. and the Rosh fills you in. When does the reason, when does the Gzeir apply? When it's a davalach, when it's being cooked, when there's a transferring of quote-unquote tam, when there's a gezeira irrelevant, not applicable, when you have three dry salamis on the table. Therefore, according to the Rosh, shishim is not an absolute. Shishim will depend, case by case, is the gezeira relevant or not. So it comes out that the Rosh is a big makel. Rosh is a tremendous makel, much more makel than the other Rishonim. According to the Rosh, it's not an absolute answer to require shishim. That's not an absolute necessity. It's often need shishim, but not always. According to the other Rishonim, shishim is an absolute chok lo yavar, again, albeit on a level of the Rebbe. So now that we've understood this major machlokes and Rishonim, that really emanates from Asuki, and really ultimately two different ways of answering the quote-unquote sphere of the contradiction between the two Gemaras, the real question we have to ask ourselves is, what led the Rosh down this path, and what led the other Rishonim actually off the path of the Rosh, down an entirely different path? Why was the Rosh so comfortable to present the sugya with the background, with the rationale, with the formulation that he did? And what is it about the other Rishonim that somehow they couldn't buy into the Rosh's theory? There's something fundamentally flawed with the Rosh's theory that caused the other Rishonim to go down a different path, which led to a Mechumra, the Chumra being that now Shishim is absolute necessity, Chayk L'Yavar. Why is it that the Rosh presented and formulated the sugya in his manner, and the whole group of other Rishonim formulated in a different manner? So the answer to that question is going to be a throwback to sugyas that we've already spoke about, some of the sugyas we spoke about right before Yom Tov. It's going to be a throwback to some of the things we spoke about in terms of Nosin Tam, in terms of Tam Kikar. How we understand, believe it or not, Min B'She'eino Mino, is going to impact now how we view the Tarobs of Min B'Mino. So what we have to do, hopefully Mitzvah tomorrow, is take a little bit of a chazara back to some of the things, just to extract some of the Rashi Prachim from before Yom Tov about Tam Kikar, what is or what is not Tam Kikar. And that will enable us to be able to understand and get a better perspective as to what's really going on behind the scenes within the Rosh and the other Rishonim. So we've identified the machlokes. We saw how each of the Rishonim, each of the groups of Rishonim read the different Gemaras. We've presented each Shita independently, but we still haven't understood yet fully why one group of Rishonim said one way, one said another. And the answer to that question is really going to have its roots back in a previous sugya. So hopefully tomorrow we'll continue from that point. Okay, wish everybody a wonderful day.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Rabbi. What time is Shia today? What time is Shia today again?
So today's Shia is going to start at 10:45 in Divrei Halacha, and then the regular Gemara Shia is going to be from 11 to 12. And then tonight, so we have the Iyun Shia from the Shul, a little bit ago, so that's going to be the regular time at Shia at 9 o'clock.
Oh, and any Mama Komas for tonight?
But tonight, I think I sent out just a Gemara Sukkah, and a Rambam Sefer Zmanim. I think that's it.
So Sefer Zmanim and
Sefer Zmanim and a Gemara Sukkah.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day, Rabbi. Thanks.